Welcome to the Community Conversations podcast, where we believe that world transformation begins with gospel transformation, and gospel transformation begins with discovering the truth about who God is and who you are. And it starts right now.
Everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Community Conversations podcast. I am here again with Noah Chant.
Noah, hi,
how are you?
Good, doing good.
Good,
enjoying the weather.
Yeah, I was. I ran out today, and it was real chilly.
Chilly and rainy. I've been listening to Christmas music yesterday and all today.
All right.
Ryan does not like that, by the way. If you're listening to this,
yeah,
super Christmassy outside.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not.
It is. We've had this argument before that, like, the only Christmas we get here is rain and cold.
Yeah.
So, like, if it snowed in July, you'd be like, oh, let's watch a Christmas movie because right. It's Christmassy outside.
Right.
But when you grow up here, you don't grow up with snow. You grow up with rain and chilly. And so if a day comes where it's super rainy and dark and gray and chilly, it's a Christmas day.
I think what I don't like about that is how many of those days you end up having.
It's not as many.
I think by
May you're done till about August or September when it's chilly. It can be rainy, but I find we have the opposite here where it's awful, where it rains and it's hot.
Sure.
So like from May on to me, it rains and it's really hot out, and that is worse.
Yeah. You get that smell of like the hot pavement.
Yes. Yeah. I hate it. Yeah. I hate that. So I'm enjoying the last little bit of Christmas I can have so you can grinch your way somewhere else.
it feels to me like it loses the specialness of Christmas. If I get like 12 texts throughout the year from you telling me how much it feels like Christmas.
How much of a Christmas day it is.
Right.
I think it builds in the anticipation of what's to come.
And I'm like, well, I don't even want Christmas.
If it's going to happen in May, I don't want it to happen again in December. Yeah, when it gets rainy and chilly.
I know what you mean, though.
Yeah.
I did grow up with, like, snow.
Right.
So
if it snowed in June, you're going to watch the Christmas movie.
Right.
So, like, those are hard. It's hard part is, too, those days are hard for me to be motivated. It's like fully raining and it's a bit chillier out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting nothing done.
Yeah.
I can read, though. I can read during that.
And that's probably like
Charles Dickens. I can read Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. And I do.
I was going to say something and I forgot what I was going to say.
It's good.
Okay. So, Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Last week, I was trying to remember how much we got into this.
Mm-hmm.
We had kind of got, I know we spent a lot of the episode just talking about like identity.
Yeah, I think in the maturity and how truth and identity play into maturity when we allow ourselves to have those things correctly.
Right. Yeah. And so I think there's probably more ground to cover there. Because identity it's a really interesting thing to think about just with the culture at large.
Right.
Because identity is becoming
relative.
Relative. And it's, a lot of things are becoming relative.
Yeah. It's on a scale.
Yeah. Yeah. Truth and morality and identity and anything can be anything to anybody these days is what it seems like.
Yeah.
So I can be anything. And, I think we brushed on this last week, but I think one of the problems I think our society is facing is that truth, not only is it relative, but it's feelings based.
Yes.
So
that's where we really ended on.
And that's
is this idea of, that my feelings play a role in my spirit life. And actually they don't.
Right.
They don't.
Right. Yeah. Feelings. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, because even like me and Bailey, example, me and Bailey have to get a new washer and dryer. And like we had the conversation of we went and looked and then we said, okay, we'll go home. We'll pray. We feel peace. We'll go with these ones. And peace is not an emotion. It's actually a state of being.
Right.
So even peace is not an emotional reaction. It is a state of being. And so those sound similar, but they're very different.
Right. And I will say too, the thing about peace is that the peace that you're looking for is the one that comes from the Holy Spirit himself.
Yeah, his voice. Yep.
Very much so. So even that, while you could qualify maybe peace as a feeling in one sense, it's a state of being, like you said, that is rooted in the reality of knowing who the Holy Spirit is. And
right.
So if you have peace about this, it's only because you know that he's good and faithful.
Yes. Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. Yep.
Yeah.
And the shocking thing is sometimes the peace of the Spirit does not exempt you from having to oftentimes fight the anxiety of your flesh.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
There'll be a moment where, like, you've got peace and this moment tries to come in and you've got to fight that. And so you think you don't have peace. It's like, no, the Holy Spirit's given you peace. You're just, now your emotions are involved.
Yeah.
And anxiety is an emotion.
Yeah.
You know, it's a state of and everything in our lives is about emotional, because oftentimes, even if we were to go into arguments, we would say, well, I feel like.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I personally feel.
Uh-huh.
And feelings are not.
Right.
Feelings are not the way to spiritual maturity, and they're not the way of Christ. Because Jesus's teachings are the opposite, oftentimes, of how I feel. When Jesus says, right. When a guy slaps you on one cheek, turn the other cheek, that's moving past my feelings and emotions.
Right. He's not saying you have to like it.
Yeah. When a guy steals my outer garment, he says, don't forget to give him the tunic too.
Right. Yeah.
That's moving past my emotions and my feelings.
Right.
And so Christianity is, we've tied it to emotions, which has made us moralize truth.
Mm-hmm.
And truth is not based off moral empathy.
Right.
Truth is based off God.
Mm-hmm. Who he is and what he says.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's cliche, but Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and life. And even we've talked about this before when Jesus is being crucified and Pontius Pilate says, well, what is truth?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We've talked about how truth can sometimes, in a sense, feel relative, but truth is not. It's a standard set by the Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't flow and change and ebb with our emotions.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing, is truth in terms of like you said, like it's who Jesus is, it's who God is, and it's what he says is reality.
Right.
And is real.
Yeah. And that's hard.
It is hard.
Like, it's easy to say that homosexuality from a biblical perspective is wrong, and so I think it's wrong, until my kid comes out of the closet or my grandkid comes out of the closet.
Hmm. Sure.
Well, now homosexuality went from being wrong, and I see it wrong, to now I have an emotional tie into that realm.
Right.
And so then it becomes, how can I process truth now because I have an emotional tie?
Sure.
And that changes the game for people. It's very difficult.
Sure.
It's very difficult to remain in truth when my emotions start to begin to get tied up and empathy begins to play a role in how I view society.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy for us to get caught up in empathy. Empathy is our problem with justice.
Sure.
God is justice and right. But
sure.
Because of our empathy, often we are not able to see justice correctly, because we view everything through the lens of our emotions of sadness, kindness, and those are good things, but they can't be wrapped up in empathy that leads them to being perverted away from justice and what is right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what's hard is, so you know, I've been reading Dallas Willard.
Yes.
And he's dense.
He's dense.
And so I'm currently reading Renovation of the Heart.
Yeah.
At like the slowest pace.
Sure.
Because I want to understand what he's talking about. But one of the things he's been saying is just how you, within the mind, you can't separate our thoughts and feelings necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
They're so intertwined.
They are.
And that's what's, and I think the challenge that we come up against is that you're right. What we face every day brings with it emotions, every circumstance, mm-hmm. everything will have emotions and thoughts tied to it. And I think our task in terms of, you know, keeping our mind, well, pursuing mind renewal and just keeping our mind in a healthy place is learning the ability to say, I know I recognize what I'm thinking and I recognize how I'm feeling. But how does that measure up against what I know to be true?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the challenge.
Yeah.
And that's really hard to do.
Yeah, because we invert. Mm. And so what we should do is take our emotions and feelings and put them up against the yardstick of truth.
Right.
Instead, what we do is we put truth up against the yardstick of our emotions and our feelings.
Right.
And so then one dictates the other when it yeah. should be opposite of that.
Yeah.
You know what exactly, I mean? It's yeah. a different way of.
Yeah.
And I think we have perverted what love means.
Yeah.
Love so. Means right now in our world, love predominantly means that no matter what someone does, you just love them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But that also means that you are a, you also are, I can't think of the word, but basically you don't care what somebody does. You're just going to love them. That's not really what love is.
No, and it's not ever what Jesus modeled.
No, not at all. Right. Like at the end of the day, like when Benjamin fights his sleep, it's because he's wanting to stay up, but I love him, mm-hmm. so I'm not going to let him.
Right.
I'm going to put him to sleep.
Right.
even yeah. though he thinks, even in his little brain, there's mm-hmm. some type of FOMO there that he wants to fight and fight and fight sleep to be awake, to be mm-hmm. awake. I hate it for him, but he, because I love him, I'm not going to do what he thinks is best for him. I'm going to do what I know is best for him.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. And we've perverted love to believe that it's that you get to tell me what's best for you and I'll just live by that.
Mm-hmm.
In some relationships, we do have like that because we're not welcomed into them, and that's okay.
Right. I think the closer somebody gets to, you know, your inner circle, whatever mm-hmm. you want to call it, the more.
Right.
I think the more access you have.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like at the end of the day, like if you come to me next week and say like, Katie's getting on my nerves, so I'm divorcing her.
yeah.
Like I love you, and I know that's how you feel, and I know that that's in the moment your truth,
mm-hmm.
but it's not biblical. So you're not going to do that.
Right.
And I'm going to tell you no.
Right.
And if you do, like, you'll have no support from me.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, that's hard because you're my, like at the end of the day, like we're all friends, but like you're my friend.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, me and Katie are mostly associated because of you and me, but that'll be the day where me and Bailey go like, we're on Katie's side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
you know what I mean? Because true, because to love you is to understand what truth is and to constantly speak that into you.
Yeah.
That's what real love is. That's what Jesus modeled.
Yeah. So here's, I thought this was interesting. So a few weeks ago, I was having a conversation with a friend, and I'm not joking, maybe 2 days later, I just hopped on a John Tyson podcast, and he started saying exactly what we were talking about, and it was fascinating.
Oh, nice.
But here it is. It's that.
He steals a lot of my stuff.
Here's what it is. What we do is we confuse kind with nice.
Mm.
So love is kind. And Jesus was kind. Mm-hmm. But even John Tyson says, Jesus wasn't a nice guy.
No.
And one of the problems is that is what the church has tried to turn men into, is just nice guys.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like, and John Tyson said, he says, you don't crucify nice guys. Jesus wasn't, no. he was the embodiment yeah, of kindness.
That's really good.
He was the embodiment of kindness.
Yes.
But he wasn't nice. He flipped tables when he needed to, and he chased people with a whip.
He called a Gentile woman a dog.
Yeah. He was brutal to the Pharisees.
Yeah,
the way he spoke to them.
Yeah,
but it wasn't unkind,
and it wasn't not out of love
because it was true.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're coming up to good. Is if I come to you and I'm like, hey, Katie's driving me crazy. I'm just gonna head out. Like you know, I'm gonna divorce her. This isn't working. It would be nice of you to try to support me. That'd be like the nice guy.
Of course.
To support me.
You're my friend. Whatever you feel, I want you to be happy. Yeah. Oh.
But it wouldn't be kind of you.
No.
It'd be really unkind of you
to
willingly and knowingly let me do something that is against what we know to be good and true.
Right, right. And I think, and I know we'll get into spiritual formation another time, another season of the podcast. But a part of spiritual formation is also forming the parts of me that don't understand correct truth into truth.
Right.
And so my relationship with Jesus, I think no matter what, we are still in the process predominantly of fighting our relationship with the Lord being about legalism and have-tos and law.
Right.
And we don't understand that the benefit of prayer, of silence and solitude, of scripture reading, of all the different personal disciplines are about not only intimacy and forming my soul, but also about revealing to me what is truth.
Yeah.
Because the more I'm formed into who I'm designed to be, the more I understand what truth is.
Right.
And you don't get to determine some truths.
Mm-hmm.
I hate it if you're in a season where you don't like going to church. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
I know.
It's what you're called to do.
Yeah.
I hate if the scriptures to you are boring right now. It doesn't matter. It doesn't. I hate if your marriage is boring to you right now. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and at the end of the day, like, we are building lies to create in ourselves the boundaries we want based out of our feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So we say things like, we were going to go to church. We were going to go do this. We were going to go do this for the Lord. And it's just a long day. It's a busy day. It's like, right. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. I get it. You have vacation. You have things. We all do. I'm having to go to Canada for a couple of weeks. At the end of the day, though, the standard is this is how we live. This is how believers do things.
Right.
And truth is not relative.
Mm-hmm.
And we can be kind to people and truthful and honest with them.
Yeah.
And the thing that has made, in my personal opinion, the thing that has made our friendship work has been your ability to be kind and truthful and not overtly nice, because it's made me a better person.
Sure.
Which has made me be closer to you because I know you'll be honest. And honesty is kind.
Yeah. Yeah. And to give even like just like a little context from my perspective. So I remember the first time it was your mom ever told me that you were going to be, that the plan was for you to take over B-Love.
Yes.
And this was years ago.
Yeah.
This was back
1990. Okay.
This was years ago, you know, 4 or 5 years ago at this point.
And maybe six now. Because we're in 24.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. But in that moment, I remember sitting in her office, and we had a meeting, and then we were just chatting after that. And she, you know, was just kind of sharing some of what, you know, what they were thinking and feeling, because we were kind of gearing up to launch Be Love Co.
Uh-huh.
And in that moment, the Lord spoke to me, and I've shared this with you, but he spoke to me and he was like, this is like, hey, she's right. Noah's going to be taking over, and your job is to get behind him and to push him forward.
Yeah.
And so to me, that looks like that part of what that looks like is helping you to be the best version of you.
Right.
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 And to me, like, that feels kind.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel easy or nice.
No.
But it feels kind.
Yeah.
In the moment to say like, hey, I know what you're capable of and I know the potential you have. Right. I want to help you get there.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. And I think we've both had moments where we've said like, like what you're doing now, there's more than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've both had those moments in our friendship of like, this is great, but there's more in you than what you're currently producing.
Right.
And let's not pretend there isn't.
And if you don't have anybody in your life that can say that.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of feel sorry.
You got a problem.
I think everybody needs people in their lives.
Yeah.
Who can say that, who have that voice in their life.
Because in the same way, not having a spiritual authority is lawlessness. Also, that's a form of lawlessness. And lawlessness is comfortable, but it's not right.
Yeah.
It's comfortable for a season.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But there needs to be someone in your life that goes like, hey, like, this isn't right. This is wrong.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, I'm happy that I have people in my life and I am this for other people. And I've been very bold people to say like, hey, no, that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I think, no, it's just wrong.
Yeah.
What you're saying is wrong.
Yeah, this is not the way.
Yeah, and I think people hate the thought that what they're saying is, well, it may be a little, no. We always want to have a piece of being right.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is sometimes we're just wrong.
Yeah.
And truth is hard because it can make us wrong.
Right.
And it's hard, but it's good.
Yeah.
It's meant to push us into a greater reality.
Yeah. Yeah. It is.
If the vision you have for who you want to be spiritually is not coming true, there's something wrong in your theology or your thinking.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. It's not because it's just not happening.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not because, you know what I mean? It's not because it isn't, one day it's going to wake up and it's just going to click for you. There's something wrong. Doesn't mean you're exactly where you're always going to be, But you should see substantial movements of growth throughout your existence. And if you're not, there's something wrong with your theology or your thinking.
Right. Yeah. The problem is never on the Lord's side, as if he's withholding something.
No. And the problem is not that you're right, but everything else is waiting to catch up to your rightness, which is normally what people believe. Yeah.
That's a good way of looking at
it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Is that, you know what I mean? And so, and I think we are drunk on individualism. And so when I'm an individual, it means I never have to be wrong because I'm myself.
Yes.
And we're drunk on that. We're drunk on individualism from the place of like, well, that works for you, but it doesn't work for me. Well, no, that's what the scripture says.
Right.
So it needs to work for you.
Yeah.
Sorry. And
that, yes. That is the problem. One of the greatest problems, I think, with individualism, it's just what you said, is that is because truth is relative and it's feelings based, I can do or be or say anything and feel like it is right and true.
Right.
Regardless of what anybody else says.
Right.
Regardless of reality, regardless of facts, regardless of anything.
Because even my morality is based on my individuality. So my morals are set upon my person as an individual, which means that my morals are flexible.
Right.
And morals are not flexible. Mm-hmm. They're a standard.
Right.
And individuality will push you into a place of saying that everything is relative, dependent upon myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not existence.
Yeah.
That's not how we're designed.
That is chaos.
It is.
Literal chaos.
It's mass, because you change constantly.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, here's an example. Here's the simplest example is when people say, I'm just a night owl.
Mm.
I just stay up super late. Well, science would say that's wrong. Science would say, and you can look up any sleep science you want, that the best way to get the best sleep is to be asleep between 10 and 11 p.m.
Uh-huh.
It's the best way to get into your sleep cycle, into REM, into deep, is between this period and this period. There's a circadian rhythm designed for your body that says you need to go to bed here, you need to wake up here. Well, I just like to wake up late. That's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's wrong. It's not how science has designed. It's not how they would say the optimal amount of sleep is.
Sure.
And the reason you're waking up tired is not because you're a night owl, or not because being a night owl is right for you. It's because that's not how optimal sleep works.
Sure.
It's just not.
Yeah.
And you can still do it. But what you can't say is this is right for me as an individual. It's wrong. But it's okay that you're doing it.
Yeah.
The problem is when we justify and make right things that are not right.
Yeah.
But because I'm me, it's right for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I can have two wives. Because my first wife's okay with it. So it's right for me.
Right.
I can stay up all night and sleep all day because that's right for me.
Uh-huh.
No, it's not. No, it's not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, at the end of the day, here's a great example. You can eat all the sugar you want and never gain a pound. If I look at gummy bears, I've put on 15 pounds. That doesn't mean you can eat as much sugar as you want and I can't.
Right.
Sugar is going to rot you the same way it'll rot me. It just won't put fat on you.
Yeah. Right.
And so truth doesn't become relative by our body types and our metabolisms. Truth is truth and health is health.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you go eat all the crap you want for the rest of your life. See how well that works out for you.
Right.
And so we can't make truth dependent upon my individuality. There is absolutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's just absolutes. Now, we are individuals. We have different likes, different things we enjoy, different types of music, clothing, style. Mm-hmm. Those are okay. But the problem is individualism has become this whole other thing where I, in a sense, even though we don't want to say it, individualism is a form of idolatry because I worship myself because I'm so different.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
That's good. I have some thoughts on that. Let's take a quick break.
Bingo.
And then we'll come right back.
Perfect.
Are you in the market for top-notch packaging solutions? Look no further. Introducing Associated Packaging, your trusted partner in packaging excellence. We specialize in providing high-quality packaging supplies and cutting-edge packaging automation. Our team is dedicated to ensuring your production runs smoothly with our factory-trained service technicians, just-in-time inventory management, and turnkey packaging solutions. say goodbye to costly downtime. With associated packaging, you'll maximize uptime and reduce downtime, boosting your efficiency and profitability. Don't compromise on packaging quality and efficiency. Choose API for all your packaging needs. Call us today at 706-459-9996. Ask for Chad Balistrieri or visit our website at www.associatedpackaging.com. Associated Packaging, where packaging excellence meets innovation.
So with like you said, everything being kind of just so relative, and even, you know, it's funny, you during the break we mentioned this, but I'll say it here too, that I think what you're saying is absolutely right, even in terms of like sleep science, mm-hmm. and just knowing what our bodies actually need and how they work and how they mm-hmm. function, that there, I think there's an absolute to that.
Sure.
But for people like me, that's something I have to work to like achieve good right. sleep, because I do, like, I want to stay up late.
Right.
Right. And I've always been that way since a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. You're lawless. Yeah. You're a rebel.
And so I think I'm sure we could find 100 million different ways that we do that in our own lives, that we try to justify, you know, justify being or doing a certain thing
mm-hmm.
while completely disregarding these like absolute truths mm-hmm. that are found in not only science and reality, and, you know, that's a hard thing, but I think you're right.
Yeah. It's a hard place to... It's hard because there are things like we enjoy, and I don't want to not make my life enjoyable, but I also can't. Here's the thing. We oftentimes can't swallow that what we like is wrong, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You can be a night owl all you want.
Yeah.
I don't care if you stay up till 3 a.m.
Right.
Don't tell me it's right.
Right.
You know yeah. what I mean? Doesn't bother me. Doesn't bother me if people think, well, I'm going to eat 10 Reese's cups a day because that's just how I feel. Mm-hmm. But don't justify it and say that's right.
Right.
Say this is wrong and I'm doing it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's tons of food I eat that I don't think is right for my body. It's wrong, mm-hmm. but I eat it anyway.
Yep.
And that's just, I'm okay in the moment with that.
Yeah.
And what the problem becomes is not that we do stuff. It's that we justify and make it a truth that it's okay for me.
Yeah.
And things can be wrong and you still do them. Mm-hmm. Some things you shouldn't do that are wrong. Sure. Like meth is bad for you. There's no right person that it's for.
Right.
And you shouldn't be okay that it's wrong and you're still doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know what I mean? But there are things like, you know, staying up late. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not right.
Yeah.
It's okay that you do it. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? There's just a reality of how the body works with a circadian rhythm and how sleep cycles work and how REM leads to deep and how that mm-hmm. pushes out depending on what time of the day it is.
Yeah.
It's just the nature of how the body's designed.
Yeah. And I, thinking about identity, I'm trying to put myself in the mind of a person who isn't an active follower of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Because for you and me, I almost didn't even hear that. Like, yeah. You just slid that right in.
Just right underneath.
Because for you and me, we have an understanding that there is a person to whom our identity is linked to.
Yes.
And that our goal for as long as we're alive is to do what we can to become like him.
Right.
But that's what our identity is, as sons and daughters right. of Jesus and as followers sure. of him. And that as we go throughout our life, the goal is that we would become more like him.
Yeah.
And in a sense, we lose a bit of our individuality because mm-hmm. like we're all kind of
sure
going towards this common, yeah, you know,
in the center, in one place.
But think about this from the perspective of a person who doesn't have that and their identity is linked to who knows what.
Right.
Right. And I mean, even today it's primarily to like sexual orientation and gender and,
yeah.
And you know,
well, I think without Christianity as your framework for your life, you used to be able to still find identity and purpose in community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now with social media, television, work from home, name it. We don't have community if we're not believers predominantly.
Right.
And so we choose a extreme form of individuality, which means that I'm solely responsible to define my purpose, my gender, my meaning, my understanding of the world. I build my own framework, which is a dangerous place to be.
Yeah.
And it often leads me to finding small pockets of community that view things the exact way I do. Which is leads to a form of like cultism, because we're all just thinking the same thing. Like when you're in a church community, people have different beliefs, theologies, thoughts, processes, ways of parenting, ways of doing anything. And it's not that way when you search out for people that see things the exact same way you do.
Right.
And so I think outside of being a Christian, it's very difficult because you are often on an island on your own. Like, you don't have to go anywhere or do anything. Everything is brought to you. You have Grubhub and DoorDash, and you work from home now, and your movies and televisions is brought to your house. Everything.
Yeah.
And the, you know what I mean? And so when you don't have, like, there used to be a thing, if you had to go to work, you had to be in society, you had to attend PTA meetings, you had your kids' soccer games. People don't even have kids anymore. And so you had all these different things that built and formed a society around a certain set of structures. And what we believed came out of that was like just mass manipulated zombies. But that's not true. Like the greatest advances in technology, society, purpose came out of that. And now what's happening is we've come out of saying, no, everyone's an individual. Death to the soccer mom, death to the stay-at-home mom, death to the dad, death to the guy that works 40 hours, like death to all the things. And what's come out of that now is the chaos of current society that we're facing, where anxiety, depression's at their highest, suicide rates have never been higher. Everyone apparently is more happy because they're them, and everyone seems to be apparently more miserable.
Right. Yeah, explain that one.
The science is saying the further we get away from community-driven purpose is showing us that we are becoming more and more anxious, depressed, and further away from any type of true joy.
Yeah. Well, there is that, there's that saying, misery loves company. And so we talked about this a few weeks ago, but if you're looking to grow and mature, and you're unwilling to have people around you in your community who think differently than you and do things differently than you, good luck.
Right.
Because you need, it's so important that you have people around you.
Right. And that's why, like at the end of the day, like it's hard because you're a pastor. It's the importance of church community.
Yeah. Right.
It's not a ploy to get you in the room. Good God.
Right.
Like it's easier for a pastor to have an online church with no one he has to talk to and still makes money and just talks to a screen and goes home.
Right.
And people are forming those for that reason.
Right.
But people are formed, built, challenged, structured in community with each other.
Right.
It's how design works.
Yeah.
And we are denying ourselves that and choosing. And that's why I don't like the kind of the Western church model of I go in, I go to service, and I leave. It's against the whole design of church.
Right.
Of I'm in the weeds with certain people,
and
we challenge and develop each other.
Yeah. But you're right. In the absence of that church community, what people will do is, and I mentioned this a minute ago, that misery loves company. Because if I'm not in a community of people who, where there are varying differences of some belief, but thought and just ways of doing certain things. If what I'm looking for in community is people who think exactly like I do, who believe exactly like I do, the problem is if I am an anxious and depressed person, what are the chances that I'm going to find other people who are anxious and depressed? Because I will feel better about myself knowing that I've got people around me who are experiencing the same thing, right? When what really, if I'm an anxious and depressed person, what I need is people who aren't, who I can go to, who can pull me out of that.
Right.
Not people who.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Because same thing with negativity.
And it's easy. It, if the thing is, it's easier too. And I think that's the draw on the temptation.
Yeah.
It's easy. If I'm struggling, it's easy to find other people who are struggling with the same thing.
It makes me feel better about my struggle.
It makes me feel better about my struggle. And then it removes from me the responsibility to actually change and do something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, find someone that hates their church and you'll find somehow they hang out with everyone that hates the church.
Right.
How weird is that?
And it doesn't
find someone negative. All their best friends are negative.
Yep.
Find someone that's happy and joyous. You'll find a lot of their friends are the same way.
Right.
You want to change your method and your ways. Start changing who you're around.
Right.
If you're unhappy, if you're anxious, if you're depressed, if you're filled with anxiety, quit hanging out with maybe the group you're hanging out with.
Right.
It's a sign. Jesus, it says that Jesus went away to pray and spent all night in prayer to pick his apostles.
Yeah.
Jesus spent a whole day in prayer. The Son of God spent a whole day in prayer just to determine who would be the 13 or 12 people that were closest to him.
Right. Yeah.
It was a big deal.
Right.
Who you build that circle around.
Yeah. And he didn't, you know, we often say he had 12 disciples. He didn't have 12 disciples. He chose 12 apostles from his disciples.
Right.
That was a big, that wasn't a decision that he chose lightly.
No.
Because he knew that these are the guys that I'm going to spend the bulk of my time with.
Yeah. And even then he had three.
Right.
That were closer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so we have to realize that oftentimes who we hang out with will be a part of building the product of my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just the way it is. Like, that's a scary thing because you want to build right. If there are people I'll probably never hang out with because I see how they are with their children.
Sure.
And I have a child now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There's people I see how they process thought and how they deal with anxiety, how they deal with peace and pressure and all these things. And it determines who is in your innermost sanctum.
Mm-hmm.
And that matters and it should matter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And your church culture should matter for that.
Yeah.
I mean, like at the end of the day, I'm not saying be love is the begin all end all of churches, but if you are not theologically growing into a depth of understanding scripture and you are not surrounding yourself with community that builds you, pushes you, and grows you, if you're not actively in a position where you have people that you can share in confession, that you can share in hard things with, if that is not your church culture and community, it's not a church.
Mm-hmm.
It's a social group.
Right.
If you leave every day encouraged, mm-hmm. I put in air quotes.
Right.
If you come for an hour and it's been quick, it's been vibrant, it's been joyous,
mm-hmm.
great. At the end of the day, like the church is about positioning you, growing you, and moving you into the likeness of Christ.
Yeah.
And that's done at a deeper roots level in you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not the 10-minute oil change.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I mean? It's the I don't know. I don't know cars, but it's the transmission stuff. it's the doohickeys in your engine.
Right. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. If you've been at the same church for 5 years and you look back and over those 5 years, you've not changed.
Yeah.
Something is off.
Yeah. Right.
Something isn't going the way it should
something
be going.
Something is not right.
Right.
And if there's no one there to be able to, I'll tell you here's a,
okay. Go there.
Here it is. And if there's no one in your church that you're in community with that can tell you they haven't known or haven't seen you grow in 5 years, you're also in the wrong place.
Sure.
If there's no one connected to you that can say, hey, I've seen you the last couple of years and it's not good. Your marriage, I've seen how you are with your kids, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not good, man. It's not going well. If there's no one in your church family that's like that either, then you're in the wrong place.
Sure.
You are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like communities for us has been designed specifically with the idea of having community pastors and leaders. Like we call our community leaders frontline pastors from the place of them being able to hopefully pastor and lead people well.
Mm-hmm.
And to even as the senior leader of our church, I hope that Chad, who's my community leader, has the right to say into my life, hey, I'm seeing this and this is not a healthy way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
I want that.
Right.
You know what I mean? I've got people in my life. And if you don't, even if you're not growing in 5 years of being at a church, and then there's on top of that, someone not being able to tell you that you haven't grown,
mm-hmm.
That's the two big red lights flashing in your face that you're not doing what Christians do.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're doing what? Motivational. You're going to motivational speaking moments filled with fog and sounds.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's why worship music has moved into even what it's moved into, because predominantly all of our worship songs are not to God, they're about God. And so they're catchy and they catch our emotions and they're easy to sing along to.
Right.
But worship is actually only takes place when we sing songs to God.
Right.
Not about Him.
Right. And unfortunately, not only are some songs about God, some of them are about us.
Yeah.
Which is even worse.
Yeah. 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 Like, as long as I'm breathing, I got a reason to praise the Lord. That's not a song to God. That's a song about God and you. It's not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But to sing, to worship you, I live. Mm-hmm. To worship you, I live. I live to worship you. That's to God. Mm-hmm. That's to Him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Those songs about dry bones are songs to God.
Sure.
They're not. They're songs about God.
Yeah.
And that's fine, but they're not worship.
Sure.
They're music about the Lord. And those aren't bad things.
Right.
But don't call them worship. Worship is songs to God.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I feel like for a lot of people, because we've had a lot of just conversations in our community just about what worship is. And that's something I know you've been thinking and studying a lot.
Yeah.
And your dad has. And we have Abby and Braden who, you know, who are into that. But I think for a lot of people, that is probably a really radical thought.
Right.
To have the thought that there are maybe a lot of songs that are being sung that aren't technically worship, because they're not songs that are sung to the Lord.
Right. Like, He won't fail. Not a bad song. He won't fail.
Yeah.
But it's not a worship song. It's not to God. It's about God.
Yeah.
You won't fail. Great. Awesome. How about you say, "You won't fail"?
Sure.
What about one word change?
Yeah.
That makes it to Him.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if like Katie only talked about you.
Right. I literally just had that thought.
Did you?
I did. Because I was trying to think of another way to put that into perspective of, you know, what if this was me and Katie?
Yeah.
And I only, when I was with Kate, I only ever told her, I only talked about her and about how I felt.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah. And I don't even know how to use, like, I can't even make up an example because it's so far-fetched.
Yeah.
But it's the reality of where we're at. And so all of it ties into this thing of like, and here's how wild it is. It ties back like this, that worship music has become about how I feel and what I think is worship.
Mm.
Leads back to individuality again. It leads back to my emotions and my feelings. And here's the thing. Some songs are written out of beautiful places.
Yeah.
But they're not worship songs.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like a worship song is like, I believe you're my healer. I believe you are more than enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's a song to God.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I can't think of another one right now, but there's a lot that aren't. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. It's not that those songs don't have any value. It's just that
they're not worship songs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And they're great. They're great. But worship has moved into something that's not about the Lord predominantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because everything has become about, like, individuality has snaked its way into the church so much that the structure of our services and our methods is built around what will be the most comfortable for people.
Right.
So we keep it an hour, mm-hmm. hour, 10 minutes. We don't let the message go over this. We don't let the worship go over this. It's three songs, one fast, one medium, one slow.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the hope is that we have a bunch of signs when people come in the door, you look good, you belong here, this and that, just to make you feel good and make sure that you're not offended or anything's too hard for you being in the room today.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And what happens is that becomes about the message that communicates is, we want to make sure you're comfortable. And if you're not, don't worry about it. You don't have to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus says, eat my flesh and drink my blood.
And they all left and everyone walked away from him except the 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jesus says, like, if you to follow me means to give up your life.
Right.
You know what I mean? Jesus says, let the dead bury the dead.
Yeah. He told the rich young ruler, yeah, you can follow me. Just sell everything you have and give it to the poor.
Right.
And come along.
Yeah.
He with Jesus, it was never an invitation into comfortability.
No.
He wasn't concerned about people's comfort level.
No, no. And joy is not often attached to comfort. Right. Joy is attached to purpose and meaning.
Right.
When I'm living out my purpose and meaning, there's joy in my life. It doesn't mean I'm comfortable.
Right.
Most people don't enjoy retirement because there's no purpose and meaning in it.
Yeah.
Even though it feels comfortable. Most people get retired and they're like, I can't do this. Right. I'm just sitting around all day.
Yeah.
And churches moved into that where we allow ourselves to create an atmosphere of comfortability. And then what's hard as a pastor is when you don't create that and people leave, you go, oh, I need to revert. I need to go back to being comfortable. The hard thing is not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not what the church was designed to be.
Right.
The church was designed to make you look like Jesus, and that's oftentimes not a comfortable thing.
No.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
It's not comfortable.
Right.
Not comfortable at all.
Okay. Let's end here.
Yeah. Feels good.
Yeah. Yeah. That was great. Okay. To our listeners and watchers, thank you. If you've not been to our YouTube channel, if you've just listened through where else? Spotify.
Yeah, Spotify, Apple. Head on over to our YouTube channel.
Yeah, head over to YouTube. And whether you have, whether you haven't been there, if you could do us a favor, it would be a big help to us if you could like this video and subscribe. That goes a long way for us.
Does help us
for the
lot.
Channel.
Yep.
Yeah. Any closing thoughts?
No, I think that's it. I think individuality is found with Jesus, not yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think individuality is built in community, which sounds backwards, but it's actually true.
Yeah. So here's a thought for you. I'll say this. Maybe spend some time this week, and if you are in a Beloved community, be thinking about this, and to our leaders, you can maybe use this as a springboard into conversation. But just start spending time this week thinking about what does healthy individualism look like, and what does a healthy identity look like as somebody who is rooted in Christ and who is a follower of Him. What does it look like to be a healthy version of you? What is you, and what is Christ, and you know what needs to change and what needs to grow and what,
right.
You know?
Right. It's good.
Good. Okay. Great. Thank you for listening. We love you all. Have a good week, and we'll see you next time.